All Roads Lead to Rome, Part 15, by Pastor Bob, from PastorBobReed.com/AllRoads. Reed is spelled R-E-I-D. This was written on 26 October 2014, and is now read in one take with possible mispronunciations, for which I apologize. Quote, All Doves, I am going to conclude this series of posts on All Roads Lead to Rome with a number of final remarks about the truth versus the myths Americans are under. It's not because there is nothing more to add to this. To the contrary, there is much, much more. The proof of what I have been saying was revealed in the late Congressman James Traficant's address on the House of Representatives floor on March 17, 1993. It's only been a decade since Congressman Traficant unveiled the truth that has been hidden from the public eye for the better part of 70 years. Neither you nor I had any role in what led to this massive criminal takeover of the USA. Our federal government went bankrupt and was surrendered to foreign creditors in 1933 and ceased all sovereign operations. The federal government of the USA now only acts as agents for its foreign masters. You and I owe our allegiance to our foreign masters. You were volunteered into this system. It is a done deal. If you have a birth certificate and a Social Security number, you are collateral to the corporate United States of America, Inc. Remember the history of land rights to Washington, D.C. In the past, emperors claimed their rule was divine authority and that the Pope delegates divine authority. The Holy Alliance of May 15, 1213 was a treaty between King John of England, some called him James, conveying all rights, titles, and interests to England's lands to the Holy Roman See. The kings of England were indebted to Rome for their wealth, power, and authority. England and the English colonies belonged to the Roman Catholic Church. In 1452 AD, Pope Nicholas V issued a papal bull called the Doctrine of Discovery. Spain's King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella were Roman Catholic monarchs who funded Christopher Columbus. Columbus went forth to declare lands and inhabitants of the New World as property of the Roman Catholic Church. Have you ever wondered why Columbus Day is celebrated in the USA, with the closing of all government offices, banks, and the bond market, and post offices? There is a connection, and I will let you think about its meaning. Beyond these specific closings, various major cities around the country vary in their level of celebration. Over the years, going back to the 18th century, there have been efforts to eradicate its public or formal observance. This effort was led by those believing that it supported expansion of Catholic influence with the Roman Catholic Knights of Columbus. The fact of the matter is that Columbus never set foot on North American soil. He went ashore in what is now known as the Bahama Islands, a British Crown colony southeast of Florida. On May 3, 1493, Pope Alexander VI issued a bull declaration that extended Spain's rights to the New World. Since Spain's rights came from the Pope and supposedly Columbus's last journey to the New World, he carried a copy of the Pope's bull with him. Thus, Rome claimed the New World through both Spanish and English roots. With the Act of Supremacy of 1534, vested in the king's power to declare and punish heresy, King Henry VIII burned English copies of the Bible. Tyndale was executed in 1536 for translating the Bible into English. Queen Elizabeth forbid preaching the gospel in 1558. And the Bible was banned until King James I authorized his 1611 KJV Bible. When Queen Mary I was restored to the throne, she burned 300 Protestants who had been excommunicated by the Pope. Roman Catholics began to settle in Maryland, a refuge for Catholics in the New World. The belief was not as much as a refuge, but an avenue to expand and promulgate Roman Catholicism in the New World. After the Revolutionary War, King George III and Benjamin Franklin signed the Treaty of Paris in 1783. This treaty permitted the USA to exist, but also permitted the king to collect on his interests in the colonies. Furthermore, it acknowledged that King George retained his title over the Holy Roman Empire and the United States as arch-treasurer and prince-elector. This little but hugely significant bit of history is not taught in elementary or high schools in America, even to this day. Congress somehow knew that when they passed the Residence Act of July 16, 1790, that a large tract of land along the Potomac River would become available. Right on schedule, on March 30, 1791, 17 Maryland landowners led the Roman Archbishop John Carroll, signed agreements with President George Washington to essentially donate, at an underpriced amount, sell the land, which became to be Washington, D.C. A state's border is not changed just because someone sells the property. Washington, D.C. is still located on Maryland soil. Maryland even kept Washington, D.C. from freeing its slaves in 1850. The Maryland State Charter even stipulates that exports were to go exclusively to England. By rights, the Roman Catholic Church has a legitimate claim to anything attached to Washington, D.C. Jesuit Georgetown University was founded in 1789 by Jesuit Bishop John Carroll on land designed and donated to become Washington, D.C. The Carroll family motto on their coat of arms was changed at this time to "Liberty in all things," to infer at the time it was permissible to kill Protestants. Washington, D.C. is a land cession, a land cession from Maryland. Cession is not the word ceded. The word cession is used in the U.S. Constitution at Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 for the government acquisition of Washington, D.C. Cession is an ecclesiastical law, meaning vacating a benefice without proper dispensation. Benefice is defined in Black's Law Dictionary as a term derived from feudal law in which it signified a permanent estate held by feudal tenure. The original states are considered church property, and Maryland was a Catholic state. If the Pope did not properly vacate the benefice known as Washington, D.C., then the Pope still had a legitimate claim to this permanent estate held by feudal tenure and all property attached to it, and all future income from that property. We know that later, the 10-square-mile District of Columbia was indeed ceded over to the Roman Catholic Church as compensation for the $60 million of Vatican gold supplied to the Union and Confederacy conflict, subsequent to the Civil War conflict. President William Clinton, a graduate of Georgetown University, stated in his nomination speech considerable praise for his mentor, Professor Carroll Quigley. On page 950 of Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, you will find this statement by Dr. Quigley. Quote, "The individual's freedom and choice will be controlled within very narrow alternatives by the fact that he will be numbered from birth and followed as a number through his educational training, his required military or other service, his tax contributions, his health and medical requirements, and his final retirement and death benefits." Note the term that he will be numbered from birth. Note the term, quote, "that he will be numbered from birth," unquote. Professor Quigley was the historical archivist for the Illuminati for 2 years, and furthermore, he was all in favor of a world global government. He was all for publicly being out in the open about planned global government, and disagreed with insiders about their maintaining secrecy of their goals. Professor Quigley was 100% in favor of the Illuminati's plan to establish a global government. While his book is dry reading, it revealed the grand plan to bring about what we are seeing coming to pass. The mark of the beast could not be more real in future history than what the Bible has to say in Revelation 13, verses 16 through 18. Professor Quigley's remarks in his book laid out the future plan which the Bible wrote about nearly two millennia ago. I might add here a point that all military personnel today use their Social Security number as their military ID, SN number. Prior to July 1, 1969, all military personnel used a military service number, one for enlisted personnel and one for officers. I can still repeat my number today, even receiving it on July 5, 1956. Conversion to the use of the Social Security number began July 1, 1969, and by late 1974, the process was completed. This is part of the administrative efforts to bring about uniformity and conformity of a single number, the SSN, as a lifetime number, as Dr. Quigley wrote about. I do not know how this works today in compliance with the Geneva Convention Treaty, in which a captured U.S. military person is required only to give three things to his captor: name, rank, and service number. Even by this, Dr. Quigley's remarks, the changeover to the SSN for military personnel, we can see this evolution of global government, little by little, increment by increment. That SSN will be incorporated in your Real ID driver's license to become implemented in a couple of months. Standing high atop the U.S. Capitol Dome is the goddess Minerva, wearing a crown decorated with a five-pointed pentagrams. The statue was made in Rome by American artist-sculptor Thomas Crawford. When the United States of America filed bankruptcy in 1933, it ceased independent sovereign operations. All assets of the government were turned over to the foreign bankruptcy receivership as they operated. The foreign receivers chose to continue to operate the government as before, without any change of name. The public was none the wiser, and the secret of bankruptcy of the USA remained a public secret until March 17, 1993, at which time the congressman from Ohio's 17th District, James Traficant, delivered his famous address. Just as in the case of a business bankruptcy, employees became the subordinates of the new administration. The only difference is your status is permanent and irrevocable. In exchange for federal entitlements, the 1936 Conference of Governors agreed to pledge the earnings and earning power of the individual of each state to overcome the bankruptcy. The fact is that bankruptcy has never been overcome. We are still paying it off with the taxes from the earnings of American citizens. The International Monetary Fund, or IMF for short, is the bankruptcy receivership that administers the USA today. The Federal Reserve, through the U.S. Treasury, operated the U.S. government from 1933 until 1945, when the IMF was founded to oversee global financial policies. There has not been a functioning U.S. Treasury since 1933, but it has been retained in title and administered by the Federal Reserve. You might believe we have a U.S. Treasury, however, since 1933 it has been a shell facade institution. Title 12, United States Code, Section 95B, gives the Secretary of the Treasury complete power over you. His authority has been pre-approved by the Congress in 1933. This all may seem strange to the reader, however, the law claims the Secretary of the Treasury's authority from the Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917 as amended. The 1917 Act regulates and punishes trading with the enemy. When the USA was conquered by the international creditors in 1933, we became the new government's enemy. The phrase as amended in 12 U.S.C. 95B means that on March 9th, 1933, domestic operations were removed from the exclusion to the 1917 40 Stat L411 Subdivision B of Section 5. Trading with the enemy has always been illegal. Prior to March 9th of 1933, domestic transactions were always legal. Domestic transactions must be legal because civil servants were never delegated the authority to make their master's transactions illegal. Again, after 1933, all domestic transactions are illegal. There are several other sources that confirms the non-existence of the U.S. Department of Treasury. James Traficant noted that the figurehead Secretary of the Treasury works for the IMF and is not compensated. Basically, all he does is sign his name to documents. He controls us by absolute power, pre-approved by Congress. When you volunteer into his jurisdiction by signing an application for an SSN or by signing an IRS 1040 form, you become subject to his actions, regulations, rules, licenses, orders, proclamations, declarations hereafter. The SSN, or Social Security number, is issued by a foreign power, the Secretary of the Treasury. The Social Security number is not issued by the Social Security Administration, but by the Department of the Treasury, which technically does not exist. The Secretary of the Treasury has no allegiance to the USA. He is an agent of the International Monetary Fund. This confuses people, thinking we have a Department of the Treasury when in fact we have none because we are still in bankruptcy receivership since 1933. Federal Law 22 U.S.C. 286AA requires the President to appoint the U.S. Governor of the IMF. This appointment is given to the Secretary of the Treasury. If the President appoints someone to the official office required by law, and the position requires him to control you with powers pre-approved by Congress implemented by a treaty, you would think his salary would be paid by his employer. However, Title 22 U.S. Code Section 286AD1 prohibits the U.S. government from paying the U.S. governor of the International Monetary Fund. He is an unpaid secretary of the U.S. Treasury. This sort of reminds you of the early Western movie sets where the buildings were just storefronts or backdrops for the movie picture cameras. The U.S. Secretary of the Treasury is the U.S. representative to the IMF. Furthermore, he also is the U.S. representative to Interpol and has allegiance to its superiors. This duty or function was assigned to his office of U.S. Secretary of the Treasury in 1958. The Secretary of the Treasury is to abstain from advising them in the discharge of their duties. He cannot give advice, he can only take orders. He is not really the U.S. representative to the IMF, but rather he is the IMF manager of the USA. The Secretary of the Treasury takes orders on how to manage the IMF's property. You and I are IMF property. Who do you think issues orders to the U.S. military? President Obama? No. The U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff? No. The Senator House of Representatives? No. The U.S. military takes its marching orders from our Jesuit friends in the Vatican through its provincials working out of the Jesuit Georgetown University. They just do not wear clerical collars and clergy suits. While inquiring minds might want to know why the USA is the policeman of the world, it's not because we want to protect the weak and helpless. Rather, it is about enforcing the will of the Vatican as the Vatican's enforcers. I know this is all hard to comprehend and somewhat overwhelming to say the least, but it is true.